From 90.9 WBUR, this is a special live edition of Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker.
And I'm Boston Globe reporter James Pendle.
And today we're broadcasting live from UMass Boston in a special hour-long debate between Democratic Attorney General Maura Healey and her Republican opponent, Attorney Jay McMahon. Today's debate is hosted by WBUR, the McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies at UMass Boston, and the Boston Globe.
The Attorney General is the Chief Law Enforcement Officer in Massachusetts.
And we will get started in just a moment with the candidates' opening statements. But first, I'd like to introduce UMass Boston Interim Chancellor Catherine Newman for a brief welcome.
Good afternoon, democracy fans, and welcome to the University of Massachusetts Boston on behalf of the campus and the McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies. Thank you to Deborah and to James, and thanks to our partners at WBUR and the Boston Globe for making this debate and our ongoing series of debates possible. You know, we see these debates as central to our purpose at UMass Boston, to educate and to pursue and create knowledge, and to do so mindful that we are a public institution that exerts to serve citizens and the public good, and to shine a light on public issues and choices. I want to thank Dean David Cash and the McCormick Graduate School for joining our partners and for all of the school's distinguished work. And finally, of course, thank you to our candidates, Maura Healey and Jay McMahon, for being with us and for your many contributions to public service and to the practice of law. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you, Chancellor Newman. And before we begin, I want to let everyone know the ground rules. Candidates will have 1 minute to respond to each question, followed by a 1 minute rebuttal. We, the moderators, James and I, will be able to ask follow-up questions of the candidates at our discretion.
And listeners, there are several ways you can follow along today, aside from listening on WBUR. We're also broadcasting a Facebook live feed of today's event. You can see that, so you can see that at bostonglobe.com, radioboston.org, or umb.edu, as well as on Facebook at WBUR to watch.
You can also follow us on Twitter. Hashtag we're using today is MassAG. So let's begin with opening statements from the candidates. We will hear first from Maura Healey. She's served as Massachusetts Attorney General since 2015. Before she was elected, she worked in the AG's office in separate positions and as the chief of the Civil Rights Division, the Public Protection and Advocacy Bureau, and the Business and Labor Bureau. She's also been a prosecutor in Middlesex County and a litigation partner at the law firm WilmerHale. Attorney General Healey, welcome.
Well, good afternoon, and my thanks to you, Deborah, James, the Boston Globe, WBUR, and UMass Boston for hosting this afternoon's event. You know, 4 years ago, I ran to be Attorney General, to be the people's lawyer, and to stand up for the residents and the interests of Massachusetts. It has been an honor to be your Attorney General these past 4 years. I'm proud of the work that we've done. My top priority has been to take on the opioid crisis, to fight for those who need access to treatment and care, to save lives, and to hold accountable companies that laid the groundwork for this crisis. We've been there to stand up for consumers and students and families being taken advantage of by predatory for-profit schools, for workers, for veterans, for our seniors. And I'm proud of the fact that over the last 4 years and last year alone, we returned more than $800 million to the taxpayers of Massachusetts. I humbly ask for your support to continue on to be the people's lawyer and to be reelected as your Attorney General. I look forward to making my case, and I look forward to this afternoon's discussion.
Thank you. Next up, I'd like to introduce Jay McMahon. He's a trial lawyer with a general practice in Bourne on Cape Cod. He's also served in the Army National Guard as a second lieutenant in the military police. Attorney McMahon, welcome. You have 1 minute.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Jay McMahon, and I am running for Massachusetts Attorney General because we can do so much better here in this state. We've had over 2,000 deaths just last year due to the opioid crisis, 134 homicides, and just 8 deaths in 10 days in the city of Boston. We have career criminals being let out of jail only to go and kill police officers. Our streets are flowing with cocaine, heroin, and fentanyl, enough to kill half of the citizens of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Our current Attorney General is too busy being a political activist promoting her own political future. There's no question that she's looking for higher office. I'm not running for further office or higher office. I only want to be the Massachusetts Attorney General. I'm running because I believe in protecting civil rights of all our citizens and protecting public safety. I am the law enforcement candidate and the anti-corruption candidate. I thank you for listening, and I hope that this helps you make your decision in who you want to be the next Attorney General. Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney McMahon. Today, before this event began, Boston Police made sure that this room in particular we're in is safe, including using police dogs to do so. That's because, of course, in the last 48 hours, packages containing homemade explosives were sent to former President Obama, former President Clinton, as long as his wife, along with other prominent Democrats, and another bomb was discovered at CNN's New York office. No one was hurt, but Attorney General Healy, what do you know about this here in Massachusetts, and what kind of precautions are you taking here?
Well, obviously, we're all interested in the news that came out today about this apparent terrorist act. Obviously, I think every step needs to be taken here and all across this country to make sure that we're doing all we can to protect public safety. As your Attorney General, I have been the Chief Law Enforcement Officer, and in fact, I'm very proud to have worked with law enforcement at the state, local, and federal level over the last 4 years. I'm proud to have the endorsement and the support of the Massachusetts major city police chiefs, as well as the state's largest police union, the Massachusetts Coalition of Police. I know how important it is to have an Attorney General who will be there to protect public safety at all levels, and I will certainly continue to do that as Attorney General. These are trying and challenging times, and we must work together at the local, state, and federal level to make sure that we are doing all we can to keep our families and our communities safe.
Okay. I want to ask you, Jay McMahon, first, about the opioid epidemic. Both of you mentioned it in your opening statements. And, of course, it's been an ongoing problem here in Massachusetts, as you mentioned. Hundreds of people, thousands of people have died. And Mr. McMahon, I'm sorry to hear that you lost your son in this epidemic as well. But I'm wondering, state and now national data, as of yesterday, both suggest that we may be peaking in terms of the number of overdose deaths in Massachusetts and nationally. So I'm wondering, what does that show to you that we are achieving some success, making some progress in dealing with this, and what would you do differently?
Okay, well, absolutely, we're not achieving success. When you say they plateaued, that assumes that we're satisfied that we can have 2,000 deaths a year and that's going to be okay in Massachusetts. It should be, because Massachusetts is the medical capital of the world. We should be able to do much better for our citizens than 2,000 deaths a year. Now, it's going to take a concerted effort to go after and end the opiate deaths that we have in Massachusetts. I put forth a three-prong approach. And the three-prong approach is to have effective and successful rehabilitation, not the failures that we have in the government program. Also to dry up the source of heroin and fentanyl, because 80% of our citizens in Massachusetts are dying of heroin and fentanyl, and only the feds seem to be going after it, like we've seen in Lawrence and in Methuen just 2 days ago. So and we need extreme prosecution. Now, I know Mara Healy says that she's been the law enforcement officer, but she's soft on crime.
Time's
she
up.
Actually has stated that the Massachusetts sentencing guidelines are too harsh. I say they're not.
Okay, let's let Attorney General Healy respond, please.
Well, I think that this has been a top priority for me as Attorney General. It will continue to be. And this is not a political issue for me. As you know, I've worked extensively with Governor Baker and his administration, with members of the legislature, and with local and state law enforcement and municipal officials. Here's what I have done. I was the first to propose and advocate to make the trafficking of fentanyl a crime. I set up a fentanyl strike force in my office, secured $1 million from the Department of Justice to support ongoing drug trafficking efforts, drug trafficking enforcement efforts. And contrary to what my opponent just represented, my office has prosecuted hundreds of individuals for drug trafficking and taken millions and millions of lethal doses of fentanyl and heroin off the streets. But we have to do more, and we have done more. I set up a Narcan fund to make Narcan available to first responders. I went after the companies, including Purdue Pharma and its executives, for their role in this. I worked with the medical community and the pharmacies to change prescribing and dispensing practices, and I launched a first-of-its-kind program for public education in schools on substance use prevention. I'm going to continue this effort, and I will continue to work hard as your Attorney General. This will be my top priority for all families who continue to struggle with the effects of this deadly and devastating epidemic. My heart goes out to all those families, and that is why I do my work.
Just, I want to follow up with a couple of things that Mr. McMahon said about this. What's extreme prosecution? And I know that you have been quoted as saying you support the death penalty in these cases. Is that still accurate? And what
death,
does that
death
mean?
Of police officers.
Mm. Death penalty for the death. What about in death terms of drug people who sell fentanyl?
No, I am in favor of going after, if there's a death involved, to going after them for manslaughter, for any purveyors of this poison.
And Attorney General Healey mentioned that she did sign a bill that made stricter penalties for those who are convicted.
I proposed the legislation, actually.
Proposed it. The governor signs it. Thank you. So I'm wondering, your death penalty statements that you've said in terms of supporting the death penalty to help deal with the opioid epidemic, is that only if you're dealing with the death of a police officer, or how do you support it?
I know what statement you're referring to, and that was in reference to deaths of police officers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I support the death penalty for deaths of police officers who are killed, like what happened down on Cape Cod, what happened in Weymouth, and what's happened and other places.
Okay, so extreme prosecution here only would mean you would like stricter penalties.
Let me explain what extreme prosecution is. Extreme prosecution is when you take the purveyors of this poison, like what we had in Essex County, when you had a defendant who had 40 bags of heroin. You go after them for the max. If you can tie the defendant to the poison, then you go and don't deal that out on a suspended sentence or probation. Now, what happened in Essex County a couple of months ago, there was a judge there who let a guy go who had 40 bags of heroin, let him go on probation. And nobody did anything. Nobody responded to that from the Commonwealth. In fact, I spoke against that judge in that Senate, saying we're sending the wrong message in Massachusetts. We have an opioid crisis here, and we're letting these guys go out the door without giving them sufficient prison time. The only way to drive these purveyors of poison out of Massachusetts is to be harsh with them, to either put them in jail or make it so that they understand that their business here in Massachusetts is dangerous to them and that Massachusetts is closed to that kind of business.
Attorney General Healey, is that the only way, or what do you say in response?
No, I think absolutely not. Looking as somebody who spent a lot of time on this issue over the last 5 years, certainly we need to do all we can to get after the drug cartels and those who are pumping poison through our communities and our neighborhoods. But we're not going to get there by that work alone. My focus has also been on treatment. That's what I hear from families. They need more access to behavioral health services. I have made that a priority. I will continue to make that a priority. I also think we need to stop addiction before it starts. That's why I took the initiative and recognized that substance use prevention education was frankly an unmet need in our state. And it's why we've worked together with Chris Herron and others to launch Project TEER, to make it available in every public middle school in the state, where we can talk to young people about substance use disorder and about making healthy decisions. I have also, though, been proud to lead, as your state attorney general, working with other state AGs, a multi-state investigation into all of the opioid manufacturers That's and distributors time. Who need to be held accountable for the crisis that they created. That is work that is important, and that is work that I will also continue.
Mr. McMahon, she mentioned treatment. I want to ask you, you've talked about the need to, or the idea that we should look into paying for private addiction treatment. What does that even mean, and who would pay?
Okay. Here's the problem right now. The current government-sponsored programs have a 99% failure rate. We have people who are going through there like revolving doors. There are people now, opiate addicts, have gone through dozens of times through government-sponsored programs. Private pay programs, one time through, are 87% successful for opiate addicts. In other words, from start to finish for the program, 5 years out, no relapse. In other words, we can give opiate addicts their life back. What it has to be a comprehensive program. Now everybody says, well, we can't afford that kind of a program. We're already paying some, in some cases, up to 30 times for people going through the government programs. So I am saying, let's do it right. Let's do it once. Let's give the opiate addicts their life back and make them productive citizens and taxpayers in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Attorney General Healy, would you like to respond?
Well, I agree with Jay that we need to be doing, I think this is your position, you'd agree, we need to be doing all we can to make access to treatment, longer treatment, more sustained treatment available for all who are afflicted with disease and substance use disorder. So it's a reason I sued, frankly, the Trump administration when they threatened to cut off Medicaid funding to our state, because that undercuts our ability to get people access to the care and treatment that they need. So I've long been an advocate for treatment, and I think truly we need to do a better job, not just as a state, but as a country, dealing with real issues of substance use disorder, of addiction, and of behavioral health that, frankly, I think are present in all of our families. And that's where I come from on this, education, treatment, support, while certainly doing all we can to get after those who are pumping poison into our communities.
I want to talk a little bit about criminal justice reform and as it relates to this particular topic. One component of the criminal justice reform bill, as you may know, Mr. McMahon, was eliminating mandatory minimum sentences for low-level drug offenses. Where do you stand on mandatory minimums?
Okay, on mandatory sentences, I do draw the line with just people who are just opiate addicts themselves. I would prefer to put them in some kind of a treatment facility and give them rehabilitation to give them life back. If we give them their lives back, they will not go back to opiates, and we deprive the drug traffickers of another customer. Has to be done one by one. However, I am not in favor of giving drug traffickers or drug distributors a pass on their crimes. You've got to do it on a two-prong approach. You've got to eliminate their customers, and then you've got to eliminate the purveyors of this poison. And by being tough on them, we'll drive them out of state or put them in jail. Either way, we eliminate the problem.
Attorney General Healy, this new law does include mandatory sentences for fentanyl. Do you consider that an exemption?
Well, I consider the legislation that was passed to be important legislation. And, you know, one of the things I recognized as Attorney General when I started is that we didn't actually have a law on the books that made the trafficking of fentanyl a crime. And fentanyl is really what is poisoning and killing so many people right now in our state. I am proud that it was my office that proposed that law in the first place, and we have been out there enforcing it. As I said earlier, my office alone has prosecuted hundreds of individuals for drug trafficking crimes. In addition, we have taken millions and millions of lethal doses of fentanyl and heroin off of the streets. I think I've been aggressive, and I will continue to be very aggressive, working with local, state, and federal law enforcement on this issue. As for our sentencing guidelines, I advocated that we eliminate mandatory minimums for nonviolent drug offenders. I agree that these individuals need more than anything care and support. And there are ways to do that now within the criminal justice system as a result of the criminal justice reform legislation that I helped support. And that's important work that the Attorney General's office needs to continue to do.
Okay. Mr. McMahon, you've said the Attorney General's office needs to let those in law enforcement know that they have the support of the Attorney General. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what I mean. My opponent just mentioned a few moments ago that she has gone after hundreds of individuals when it comes to drugs. Apparently not enough individuals, because she has a sanctuary city policy. She encourages cities to become sanctuary cities. In other words, she won't deal with the feds. Now, we've got clear evidence of that. And just 2 weeks ago in Sanctuary City Lawrence, which was an all-federal job, they wound up finding enough fentanyl to kill half of Massachusetts, and they were all illegal aliens, some of them members of MS-13, right here under our noses, dealing in and distributing and trafficking in heroin and fentanyl. We just saw 2 days ago the same problem up in Methuen. Again, illegal aliens selling this stuff. They found 70 pounds of fentanyl. Someone mentioned that from the Fed said, that's to kill the other half of Massachusetts. There's too much out there, and she won't deal with the feds, but I will. I will.
That's time. Attorney General Healy, can you respond to that?
Certainly. It's totally inaccurate. Not only has my office prosecuted and investigated cases with federal law enforcement here in Massachusetts, we've been working those cases hard with our federal partners in New Hampshire as well, because if you want to talk about the Lawrence area, for example, you have to consider the pipeline that exists and the trafficking that is existing between our states, between and among Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts. That's why my office set up a fentanyl strike force at the outset with state, local, and federal agents, FBI, DEA, both New Hampshire and Massachusetts. As I said, 3 years ago, out of the gate, it was my office that secured $1 million from our federal government, the U.S. Department of Justice, to pursue these cases. That is work that we've continued, and I will continue as Attorney General. You know, when I mention the prosecutions and the cases that we've had, and we have had a number of cases and takedowns, but I also come back to the need to recognize that as aggressive as we are and will continue to be, if we don't deal with the real issues of treatment and education in this state, we're not going to get to where we need to be. That continues to need to be a focus.
That's time. I just would like also would like to take a minute before we remind folks about what they're listening to, exactly what you think of this idea about private treatment and success of treatment in the system that we have now. Attorney General Healy.
Well, you know, I think that it's important that we make treatment available both through public and private means. Right now, I talk to a lot of people who call my office and my health care hotline who are desperately seeking access to treatment and care and coverage. We need a system that works better for people. Last week, I was testifying before our Health Policy Commission on some of the issues related to the cost of health care and the barriers that people confront in just trying to find access to health care. It's something that is a priority for me as Attorney General. It will continue to be a priority, and we need to continue to do all we can to seek the support, frankly, of the federal government here so that we have access to the resources that we need to better take care of our people.
Okay. I want to remind listeners, you're listening to a special edition of Radio Boston live from the campus center at UMass Boston. This debate is between the two candidates for Massachusetts Attorney General. The debate is sponsored by WBUR and our partners at UMass Boston's McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies and the Boston Globe. We have with us incumbent Democratic Attorney General Maura Healy and her Republican challenger, Jay McMahon, who's a trial attorney from Cape Cod. We are broadcasting live on 90.9 WBUR. We're also streaming live video on WBUR.org, thebostonglobe.com, and umb.edu, as well as on Facebook at WBUR and at the McCormick Graduate School, where we are also taking questions. Listeners, you can send us your questions for Maura Healy and for Jay McMahon. You can send us a comment on WBUR's live stream on Facebook, or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. You can also use the hashtag MassAG.
Well, let's move on to guns and gun control in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Mr. McMahon, you said the first thing you would do if elected as Attorney General is to rescind Attorney General Healy's order that cracked down on copycat assault weapons. Why would you do that?
Because clearly it's only a cosmetic, it's a cosmetic enforcement order. Basically, her argument is against some peripherals that deal with nothing at all with the caliber of the bullet or the velocity of the bullet. I am a firm believer of the Second Amendment, and I think that the Attorney General should be enforcing the Second Amendment on behalf of the citizens, as with every other right that we have, as opposed to infringing on it, as she has done. She just banned wholesale categories of guns because she doesn't like guns. She has a personal animus toward guns and apparently toward gun owners. To me, it's a right in the whole United States, it's a right under the Second Amendment to keep and possess firearms. And it's also an amendment which says shall not be infringed. And as Attorney General, I will not infringe on the rights of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, all the citizens.
You know, some have said, Attorney General, that they've characterized this decision to do this as just pure politically motivated. What do you say to that? Or what do you say in response to him?
Well, I just think that that's a ridiculous assertion. I'm doing my job as your Attorney General. We have laws on the books. It's my job to enforce them. Whether it's the assault weapons ban that was passed years ago, signed into law by a Republican governor, or more recent legislation like our extreme risk protective order legislation that helps keep guns out of the hands of people who are a danger to themselves or others, or defending the law in the books that protects the right of police chiefs in your local communities to decide whether or not somebody should get a license to carry. There is a reason that Massachusetts has the lowest gun death rates in the country. Strong laws save lives. I will continue as your Attorney General to enforce laws that are on the books. And I do also take issue with the assertion that I have animus towards gun owners. Couldn't be further from the truth. I'm somebody who believes that respecting the Second Amendment and enforcing laws that are on the books to protect public health and public safety are not mutually exclusive prerogatives. And by the way, a federal district court has ruled that I am right and that the decision recently by our office to enforce the assault weapons ban was constitutional.
I think it's this time. I want to stay with this topic here for a second. Mr. McMahon, we're talking about copycat weapons. Let's talk about assault rifles themselves. Should even AR-15s be banned at all in Massachusetts?
First of all, you're calling it an assault rifle. That's something that people who don't like guns will call it. It is just a plain rifle, not an assault weapon. There's not a standing army on the planet that uses that as an assault weapon. It is just a gun. It has a barrel, it has a trigger, and it has a projectile that comes out of it, like every firearm does. Now, it may be menacing looking, but if you have a menacing looking gun and somebody breaks into your house and you show up with that menacing looking gun, you may never have to fire it. As far as I'm concerned, it's a violation of the Second Amendment when you start distinguishing and saying, they can have this, you can have that. The Constitution doesn't know those distinctions. Only Maura Healey does, and she's making us live by it.
If you get reelected, what is your message to gun owners in Massachusetts? Attorney General, she gets reelected.
That I'm going to continue to be there as Attorney General to enforce the law. And that I'm committed to reducing gun violence. You know, one of the things that I'm proud of recently is that I worked with Sandy Hook and the Sandy Hook Promise families who worked with my office to secure $1 million. You know what that's going to fund? It's going to fund education in schools to help young people in school who may be feeling stressed, who may be bullies, who may be bullied, to recognize the signs and some of the dangers that we see out there, because we need to do everything we can to keep our students and our schools safe. I'm going to be there to continue to enforce the law, and I realize I'm not the NRA's favorite candidate, but at the end of the day, I have a job to do, and that is to enforce the law, and I'm going to continue to do that.
I'd like to respond to that.
Okay.
Okay. Maura Healey stated that she's not the NRA's favorite candidate. She isn't. She's the favorite candidate of lawyers and lobbyists. They contribute $600,000 to her campaign. Under that, you have insurance people and real estate people. They've contributed over $300,000 to her campaign. So that's true. I have not received a dime from the NRA. What the NRA did like was my stand on the Second Amendment, because I told them I'm not into rewriting the Constitution and I'm not into infringing on people's Second Amendment rights or any rights for that matter. I want to be the Attorney General to enhance their rights. And she mentioned earlier about keeping people safe in Massachusetts from gun violence. The inconvenient truth is that people who have a license to carry in Massachusetts don't commit gun crimes. By and large, they don't. You have to look long and hard to find someone who has a license to carry a firearms in Massachusetts who actually committed a gun crime.
That's time. And Attorney General Healey, you should respond first off to the contributions that, that Mr. McMahon is referring to.
I'm proud to have the support of any number of residents across Massachusetts who believe in my record and want to see me continue as Attorney General. And in terms of the assault rifles question, let me just remind folks, okay, take yourself back to that Sunday afternoon when we started getting news about a shooting down in Orlando. I asked my team then whether that weapon used in that mass shooting, then the nation's largest mass shooting, was sold in Massachusetts. To my surprise, I learned that that year alone, 10,000 AR-15s were sold in Massachusetts in violation of the law. I sent a notice out to gun dealers. Two things happened. Sales of those weapons ended, and the NRA sued me. We've now been to court, and the court said that we were right in upholding and enforcing the law. I wish, though, that the NRA would be more constructive and useful in supporting comprehensive reforms, because 60% of the guns that turn up in crimes in Massachusetts come from other states, which is exactly why we need some universal measures and national reforms like basic universal background checks. As a matter of law enforcement, I would like more help record keeping and sales and the like. This is where we need to focus attention.
Great. I want to move on to a different topic.
May I just respond to this?
Very quickly.
Okay. The last time somebody got injured by a rifle in Massachusetts was 2006. So this gun enforcement order of Maury Healy's of July of 2016 affected only the licensed gun owners. That's all it affected. And she just decided at that point that it's time to curb these rifles, which were legally bought and sold in Massachusetts since 1998. Gun shops were selling them legally. Whenever you make a transfer in Massachusetts, it has to go through the Massachusetts gun portal. So they knew about all these guns. Other attorney generals since 1998 never saw this as any kind of an offensive weapon or any kind of an offensive gun. Only Maura Healey did, and she did this 1 week before she went down to the Democratic National Convention to endorse Hillary Clinton. She did it for political expediency and not because there was a threat in Massachusetts.
Okay,
because when she had done it, no one was even injured by a rifle in Massachusetts.
Let's let the Attorney General respond to that, please.
Well, I guess I want to be really clear about why I took my actions. I took my action because there was a shooting that resulted in the death of dozens of individuals and injuries to hundreds more. And I don't think we need to wait for calamity here in Massachusetts to enforce the law and take steps to protect public safety. Now, it's not me who said I was right. It was actually a federal district court judge who said that these sales, no matter how long they were going on, were illegal, unlawful, and that our office properly enforced the law. And by the way, so the public is clear, ever since I made clear to the public that this is the law, I've not taken a gun from an individual, I've not arrested a gun owner, I've not arrested a gun dealer. Sales have ended, life seems to have gone on, and you know, I wish we could have more constructive conversations about what we need to do collectively to reduce levels of violence in our homes, on our streets, in our communities, and in our schools. That's the kind of constructive conversation we must and really must be having.
But that judge's decision is on appeal.
I want to ask you, get your take on this, Mr. McMahon. What's your view of the red flag law, which allows a family member to petition a court to temporarily take away someone's gun if they pose a threat to themselves or someone else? You've expressed it, I think, I believe, at a previous debate that people who are prone to violence or people with mental health issues should see gun ownership restrictions. Is this a reasonable gun owner restriction?
Well, first of all, right now, under current law, the chiefs of police or the licensing authority, generally the chiefs of police in any town or city or the police commissioner or their designees, already have a right when it comes to suitability. I don't actually agree with the suitability the way it is written because it leaves a subjective standard as opposed to an objective standard that every other statute on the planet has. But this is a subjective standard. So if the police chief has some issue as to suitability, he can revoke someone's license to carry. Then they have to go to a hearing to get it back. But this law here that you mentioned goes way too far. It allows an invasion of someone's house when since 1790, the founding of the country almost, we've had a right of protection that government officials cannot invade your home or your private papers or anything that you have unless they have probable cause. So if they have probable cause, then they can get a warrant and do what they have to do, but not just on a hunch.
That's time. Okay.
May I just respond? Because this is an important law that I think was passed. 62% of gun deaths in this country are suicide. To me, any measure and effort that we can take, due process provided, to make sure that somebody who is a danger to themselves doesn't have access to a weapon that will kill them, temporarily remove that weapon, I think that's an obligation, something that we owe to those individuals and certainly to their families.
Okay. Attorney General Healy, your office is investigating the state police amid overtime and payroll scandals, and some folks have been charged. Some people have said that the head of the state police should be fired, maybe the Secretary of Public Safety should go because of this. Do you have confidence in the current leadership here in terms of what's going on with the state police, and what else should be done?
I think that we have seen time and time again any problems with culture involving the operation of the state police. However, my office has been aggressive. We were the first to investigate and announce an investigation into the Troop E, the Pike scandal. Already we've returned indictments against three former lieutenants of the state police, and that investigation is ongoing. We've also been involved in the investigation regarding allegations of tampering of police reports with respect to the former colonel of the state police. So my office has been very involved in these matters. We will be aggressive. We will continue to hold those accountable who need to be held accountable. I do support, though, the reforms that have been undertaken by the current colonel and by the Baker administration. We're going to continue to work in partnership. It is important that we have a state police department of the highest quality and one that the public believes in and has confidence in, and I certainly want to do everything I can to support the hardworking men and women within the state police who are out there every day on the front lines working hard to protect our families and our communities.
May I respond?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I have no confidence in what my opponent just said about what investigation she's going to take with the state police. There was a Supreme Judicial Court decision that just came down 2 weeks ago talking about people in her office, and the decision there, when it came to another scandal that's already in the government, and that is a scandal at the state police drug lab, it said about the Attorney General's office, they engaged in egregious prosecutorial misconduct, fraud upon the court, lack of moral compass. Their conduct was reprehensible and magnified by the fact that it was not limited to an isolated incident, but rather to a series of calculated misrepresentations. The ramifications from their misconduct are nothing short of systemic. That means there's heavy corruption in the Attorney General's office. I don't trust them investigating corruption when they have it in their own office. And the people who were responsible for doing that, they weren't fired. They were promoted.
Okay,
they are
time.
Now
that's
making
time.
Six-figure yeah. incomes in the government now.
We should
let
clarify.
Me just, yeah. Let me and, just and correct the record on that.
Right, that they do not work for your office. These folks did not work
No,
for
these folks worked under the prior administration. I did not hire them. I did not supervise them. They did not work during my time. So I have faith in our office. I think that's a very unfortunate recitation, and I just wanted to clear the record that that occurred under a prior administration. But and, by the way, my office has worked from the beginning to make sure that steps were taken to address issues surrounding the wrongdoing and the misdeeds of Sonia Farak and the handling of evidence at the drug lab. Our office has been out there, including in that very case that was recently decided by the SJC. My office advocated for the dismissal of thousands of cases as a result of that misconduct at the lab.
But so let's just, so folks know, if they're listening, folks in the audience, so they just know what we're referencing here. This was a Supreme Judicial Court ruling in the case of a drug lab scandal out in Amherst. The former chemist, Sonia Farak, was accused of using drug samples that were being tested as evidence in criminal cases, and thousands of cases were dismissed by the state's highest court just 2 weeks ago. And in that ruling from the judge did say that former assistant attorneys general did engage in prosecutorial misconduct. So I do think, though, these two folks have gone on to other jobs, not in your office. Should the AG be responsible for making sure that there are legal ramifications against these folks? Attorney General Healy.
There have been legal ramifications against these folks, and currently the matter is under review by the Board of Bar Overseers. But I really do take issue with the characterization about the integrity of the hardworking men and women in the Attorney General's office, the attorneys, the investigators, the troopers, you know, everybody on down the line. You've got 600 people working their tails off day in and day out on behalf of people across the state to make sure their rights are protected, you know, and I really resent the impugning of their integrity. I think we're very lucky to have these men and women doing the work that they do.
May I respond to this, please?
You may.
Okay. The two individuals that were responsible for this, they have gone on to bigger and better jobs. I said six-figure incomes. One of them went on to be is now assistant clerk magistrate with the Suffolk Superior Court. The other one is a general counsel for the Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission, all with the endorsement of Maura Healey. Now,
that's
she
wrong.
Went on to talk about that the
Jay,
state police
Jay,
schedule.
That's just, you know
the
what?
The state police
that's
schedule.
That's inaccurate.
The state police scandal, Maura Healey investigating it. Are you kidding? If it hadn't been for Andrew Lelling, nothing would get done. She's a Johnny-come-lately. She's been getting pounded in the press for doing nothing about the state police scandal. We've known about it for over a year, and just the other day she decided to do something about it. Andrew Lelling, who is the U.S. attorney, if it weren't for him, we would have nothing going on as far as the fentanyl problem we have here, because he's the one that's doing all the work, and we'd have no indictments in the state police unless he came out
that's
on it
time.
First.
That's time. Attorney General Healey.
I think I've been through this. I'll let the record speak for itself. We were the first to announce and investigate the state police. We have been involved in any number of state police investigations. And in terms of our drug prosecutions, as I already said, my office has prosecuted and continues to prosecute and hold accountable drug cartels, drug traffickers. So that's just inaccurate, those characterizations. And all I can say is we're going to continue to do the work that we're here to do.
Announcing and doing something are two different things.
Attorney General, you've sued over the president's travel ban and separating families at the U.S. border. And as you know, we now have a caravan of thousands of people from Honduras heading to the U.S. border. What should or how should law enforcement respond when this caravan gets to the border?
Well, law enforcement ought to do its job. There are processes in place to deal with folks as they arrive at the border. But I think part of what this speaks to is the failure of the federal government to take action on immigration reform and what needs to happen. And you allude to the cases that we have brought against the Trump administration. You know, we sued as a state to protect the DACA program because these are kids who are serving in our military, starting businesses, paying taxes, who all of a sudden were going to have the rug ripped out from under them. We sued and we won. We sued to protect people when this Muslim ban came down. You know who I heard from, too, over the weekend when that Muslim ban first came down? Our colleges and universities, including the University of Massachusetts, that literally had students and professors stuck overseas. Our teaching hospitals and research institutions and major employers and businesses in the state who were adversely affected by that order. On so many fronts, we have needed to stand strong as a state with bipartisan support to stand up for American values and for civil rights. We're going to continue to do that.
Time, thank you. What would you do when we may arrive at the border?
Okay, first of all, let me respond. She mentioned about, my opponent mentioned about suing the Trump administration, which she has done for 36 times on meritless suits that are going nowhere. Here's the problem with their first lawsuit. She sued the president and is after he'd only been in office for a couple of days. His temporary travel ban was not against Muslims. It was against six Middle Eastern states. There are 50 Muslim countries on the planet. Most of them are 95% Muslim. None of them were affected. The common denominator was that we knew ISIS and elements of Al-Qaeda were coming in from the refugees of those six Middle Eastern states. Now, Maura Healey would go and sue the president and end the policy and just let them come in here unvetted. To me, that is against our public safety interest. And in essence, she would leave us at the mercy of these savages coming into Massachusetts. And I got to tell you, safety is my number one concern.
That's time. Okay, that's time. Attorney General Healey.
You know, I think it didn't take me long to sue Donald Trump because it didn't take Donald Trump but a few days or a few weeks to do something illegal or unconstitutional. And that's where we've been. And that's why you see the 36 lawsuits. And by the way, we have a very strong record. defending access to health care, defending and winning women's access to coverage for contraception, standing up to make sure that we have a clean energy economy that works, and successfully fighting efforts by the EPA to roll back important limits that were put on harmful greenhouse gas emissions, standing up for student borrowers. Last week, I won another case in court against Betsy DeVos, who is trying to allow predatory for-profit schools to come in and take advantage of students. We had to take the Trump administration to court to protect our students, to protect our families. I sued on the census when they wanted to do things to change the way the census is handled. Look, I don't wish for or want opportunities to sue the federal government, but it is my job as Attorney General to stand up for the interests of our state, for our residents, for our businesses, and for our values. I will continue to do that as Attorney General and continue to work with other state AGs around the country to make sure we're doing what we need to do to protect our interests.
Okay. That's time. Very briefly.
Okay. This is the difference between Maura Healey and I. She would sue the president for political expediency at the expense of our public safety. I will do just the opposite. I will put our public safety first and your rights first. If you notice, she didn't sue the Obama administration at all. She's only suing Trump 36 times now. There's a common theme in those 36 times. It's called Trump derangement syndrome.
Let's move on just because
that's actually not true. I was lead counsel on the suit against the Obama administration when they were trying to enforce the unconstitutional Defense of Marriage Act against our married same-sex couples here in Massachusetts. And I just want to say, for all the talk about Trump, know that for all the lawsuits and all that work, which is all about protecting Massachusetts' interests, I am proud of the fact that we returned record number of revenue for taxpayers in the state of Massachusetts last year alone, over $800 million. For every dollar spent on my office, we are bringing back 17 to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I am proud of that record as your Attorney General.
Okay. We are out of time, unfortunately. So thanks to everyone. But now we are going to close with the candidates' closing statements. And Jay McMahon, we will start with you. You have 1 minute for your closing statement.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to this. I hope that this information helps you decide who you want to be as your next Attorney General. Now, you heard my opponent say that she enjoys the support of the people of Massachusetts, but really she's gotten $500,000 from people outside of the state. So she's obviously supported by special interests. Now, when it comes to the deaths by opiate addiction in Massachusetts, when she first started in the Attorney General's office, 2010, the deaths were about 500 a year. When she started in as Attorney General, they shot up to 1,900, 2,000, 2010, and 2000, in 2016, there were 2,100, and now it's at 2,000 in 2017. She takes credit for that, but the credit doesn't belong to her. It belongs to Charlie Baker. He's the one that got NARCAN out to first responders. But I got to tell you, that doesn't mean that people have stopped taking opiates. It just means that we're able
to
keep them alive longer. But nothing else is happening. I need your vote, and I'm going to ask you to support me as your next Attorney General. Thank you.
Attorney General Maura Healey, you get the last word today with your closing statement. You have 1 minute.
Well, thank you, Deborah, and thank you, James, and thank you to all of you who joined in this afternoon. I also want to thank Jay McMahon. It has been the honor, really, of my lifetime to be able to serve as Attorney General the last 4 years, to be the people's lawyer and to run a law firm that day in and day out is about protecting workers and consumers, making sure we're there to enforce our laws that are on the books, to deal with the environment, with civil rights, with the marketplace. This is work I believe in and I want to continue to do as your Attorney General. I will continue to make addressing the opioid crisis a top priority as your Attorney General, and I am committed to working hard every day on behalf of the residents and the interests of Massachusetts. I hope you vote for me on November 6th, and I will do everything to make good on that support should I be reelected. But again, I want to thank the Globe and UMass Boston and WBUR for the opportunity to have this conversation today. I think it probably helps make clear some of the differences in the candidates in this race, and I thank you for the time.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all the time we have today, unfortunately. Stay with WBUR and the Boston Globe for coverage of the midterm elections on November 6th. Thank you to our guests today, the two candidates for Attorney General, Maura Healey and Jay McMahon. A special thanks to our partners at the Boston Globe and to James Pindle, Boston Globe reporter, for co-hosting today. Also to the Radio Boston team and the engineering team at WBUR for producing today's debate.
Thank you, Deb. We also want to thank our other co-sponsor, the McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies at UMass Boston. And thanks to our audience on air at WBUR, online, and live here at UMass Boston.
If you didn't get a chance to hear the entire debate, you can hear the full debate at our websites, radioboston.org, bostonglobe.com, also at mccormick.umb.edu. Don't forget to vote on November 6th. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Zoe Mitchell. We had help today from Eve Zuckoff. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Deborah Becker, and join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.